I don't know if you need to do that. To the extent that somebody is acting in the course and scope of their duties when they're conducting an audit and they make judgment calls.
Well, this deals with the state of Oregon and basically the agencies. Now, I'm not so concerned about the individual auditor being sued as the Secretary of State's office, for example.
What I said would apply to the Secretary of State as well. I mean, to the extent that the agency and its officers are acting within the course and scope, they're entitled to immunity and protection that the Tort Claims Act affords. And so I don't think there's anything to be gained by putting that in. I don't think it would do anything.
Why would we need Section 8 then if they're already a
third parties?
Insurance code. I guess you say third parties.
I'm sorry. Because the quick answer, Representative Edmondson, is because we defend a lot of suits that involve the insurance commissioner and the securities department people and the others that are mentioned in this bill. We're trying to get at the problem where the problem exists. I'm not aware of any lawsuits against the auditors for negligently auditing.
Okay, then. So do you think there's a defense now under the Tort Claims Act for these suits that are brought against the insurance regulators?
Like I said, without knowing the particular facts, I can say as a general statement that if somebody performs an audit within the course and scope.
No, I'm not talking about audits.
Oh.
Talking about the administration of the insurance code.
That's been
now you're able to go in and plead immunities and win. You just want it made clear in the law so you don't have to even get to the point of having to go in and assert your defense?
Mr. Chair, Representative Edmondson, that's exactly the point. I mean, okay. I've personally defended a couple of these, and they take about 3 years to get to the point at which the judge can make.
I think that in view of the fact that we've got at least one state employee talking about these kinds of suits on audit, the same situation, I'd hate to miss an opportunity to save you some work in the future. So I think I understand. Thank you.
The safe subject to the same tort limitations as the state of Oregon?
Yes.
Yes.
So we have the state still in the state?
Yes.
Oh, great. Any case, let's try to see if we can actually move this bill around a little bit.
Frommeyer versus Safe.
Right. Everything is politics in the building. Do we have any objection to the DIF amendments as they've been written?
Well, I just want to, I have the amendment that I'm talking to. I don't have objection to those.
Any objection to the DIF amendments to House Bill 3520? Hearing none, they are so adopted.
I'd like to, Mr. Chair, on page 4, line 7, after the first the, which is any act or omission in the, I'd like to add, or move to add, audit of any agency or the, so the whole line 7 would read, any act or omission in the audit of any agency or the administration of the insurance code. It's just clear that then, as I put out, that we're not going to have auditors' liability.
I both want to do something substantive, and I want to do something that we're not going to get embarrassed for making state agencies immune from state, or what is, quote, a quasi-state agency, because I don't know if we sue each other.
Well,
now, what someone says in a hearing room might be appropriate, but
The gentleman who brought it up was a former deputy attorney general of the state of Oregon.
Yeah, and I don't know
so
what
I take his I take his comments with a great deal of weight. And I was surprised that under close questioning, Mr. Chair, by a number of attorneys on that committee, he made it very clear that he considered that there was a potential cause of action, whether or not he intends to pursue it. Or recommend that his agency pursue it is another thing, but I think that it's a curious this auditor's liability when auditors are auditing state agencies. I don't want state agencies turning around and saying it's the auditor's fault for not catching it a year ago.
Well, we have the attorney general being sued
quite a conflict.
For
well,
failure to represent state agencies in all appropriate details and
that it was possible.
Well, any comments about that, Mr. Landau? I mean, you already talked about that. Maybe we just, any, Representative, do you have any comment that would be lightning to that, enlightening that point?
My only comment, Mr. Chair, is that I don't think it's necessary. I understand Representative Edmondson's point, but I don't think that would add anything to the current state of the law.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a scenario when someone actually does that. I'm waiting to see it happen, and maybe this will be it. But Representative Edmondson has moved that we add. Why don't you do that again, and then we'll...
Page 4, line 7, after the first "the," adding the words "audit of any agency" or "the."
That would be on top of the amendment that we have here.
Yes. I think, to the motion, I just think it simply clarifies what the witness at least suggests is the law, may be the law now, but in view of concern that has been raised in this assembly, this session, I'm not sure it is that clear, and I want to make it absolutely clear.
Any discussion of that motion? Representative Johnson, you sit downstairs, too, on that labor committee.
Talking about line 7, page 4, the amendment you proposed a minute ago. I don't have any problem with that.
Representative Miller, you have a problem with that? Any objection to that? Hearing none, I will so ordered. The chair would move that we strike out the of the bill, the bold-faced type on page 3, lines 37 through 39. Eliminates the bill. That language attempts to eliminate the discovery rule. We'll remove that from the bill. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Any further amendments on the bill? We have two other sets of amendments, and it's more of a bold-faced type in the bill itself.
We're in works. Representative Bell, did you have a concern on page 2 of the bold, of that new G there about failing to warn?
I do, but I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how to remedy the concern.
Now we have case law, right, Mr. Landau, that deals with a failure to warn? We have some case law interprets that provision, and you're just trying to put that in statute.
No, this is different. I don't want to mislead anybody. In page 2, line 8, we are talking about statutorily adopting the public duty rule, which Oregon courts do not follow at this point. The public duty rule says that the state agencies and officials can't be liable for failing to protect the public from the acts of third parties over whom they have no control. And that's what we're trying to get at, is that we think the state, along with most of the other states in the country, the state of Oregon should not be liable on any claim arising out of a failure to protect or warn about the acts of third parties over which the state has no control.
Briefly, we plowed this ground once a minute ago.
I was going to say, I think you'll find the same opposition to this section as we found on that other bill when we tried to take the will or will not part out. And we came to the conclusion that we would put that back in.
Okay. Any further...
take this out.
Any further motion on that? We have Representative Johnson.
Sir, what about the county's proposed amendments?
But we haven't moved those yet. We haven't.
To get us moving here, I'm going to move to, on page 2, delete the boldface on line 8 through 11.
Which lines?
8 to 11 on page 2, Representative Edmondson moves to delineate the boldface. Any discussion of that?
Not line 1, right? But lines 8
through 11. Line 8 through 11, right there, page 2 of the bill. Any objection to that? Any discussion of that? Any objection? We just had a bunch of it. Well, we went around and around about what it meant. Representative Bell went on, asked some questions on it. There seemed to be some discomfort about the fact of removing.
We don't have any qualifiers in here at all. I mean, they don't even have to ask a second opinion of anybody. It says any decision, any time.
I hear no objection.
And I do want to get one thing on the record that just sticks in the back of my mind, and that is in the sex offenses against children in rural areas, we often had testimony from people who had the feeling that there was this in-house sort of protection of each other and testifying for each other, that even though many people in the city were telling them that, you know, the situation was dangerous. And this is kind of scary to me.
Hearing no objection, that language is therefore stricken. We have some amendments. Representative Johnson, anything further?
Well, is there anyone from the county that can explain the use of the amendments?
Well, the problem with the county amendments is that they have that last sentence in there, which I'm not sure what it means. And it has a language in there that states a discretionary decision also includes a decision not to perform or to perform in a manner in a different manner a mandatory duty or function when the decision not to perform in a different manner is based on policy decision related to allocation of resources. The short answer there to that is probably, you can tell what that means, but it's basically kind of a ballot measure 5 driven type concept that if they have no money to enforce the law or do some mandatory stuff, that they get off the hook if they can claim that the reason why they didn't do what they should have done in the law was because they had no money. And I think it goes a little far, so that's the problem with that amendment. I don't know if there's an objection to that first sentence there. I don't think there is. If you want to move that portion, it'd probably get adopted into the bill.
Either yes or no, is there anybody from the county here to talk about these amendments?
Oh, Paul Snyder. I still have this major bill to get to that a lot of people have come and testify on. So, Paul, okay. Come up here briefly and tell me if you'll settle for this thing absent the last sentence.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, Paul Snyder, representing the Association of Oregon Counties.
I'll call you the meeting if you want.
The material before the last sentence is better than nothing.
Well, the material for the first sentence essentially kind of statutized the case law, doesn't it? So any objection to that, to Representative...
Putting allocation of budgetary resources, or decision to perform?
Yeah, it's the first...
Mr. Chair, members, the preceding material is our understanding of what legislative intent was years ago.
Has it been court cases that have gotten away from that or something? Is that why this is necessary?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, there have been a host of court cases since then, and my sense is that they've left an awful lot of things muddled. And this is our intent to clarify the language in accordance with our understanding of what was intended.
Right. Are you willing to, Mr. Snyder, settle for the lines 1 through 7, 6, excuse me, of your proposed amendments?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I move those.
Representative Johnson so moves that. Representative Bell, comment.
Okay. I just had a question on line 3 about choices among alternative courses of action. I'd like to put appropriate alternative courses because I think that discretion ought to only be or acceptable courses of action, because one of the alternatives is to do nothing or to do something negative, and I don't think those ought to be.
If you do that, then you're going to create a jury question on every discretionary decision as to what's appropriate or not, which, again, the reason that there's...
Well, as far as treatment and education, all kinds of things, there's more than one way to look at it, and it's accepted that there's more than one philosophy behind, you know, what they're doing. But if the choice is to do nothing when it's real appropriate that they do something, then I don't consider that just a matter of discretion. I call that negligence.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Lundell.
Perhaps I could clarify. Representative Bell, the existing Tort Claims Act, the existing definition of discretionary function includes the option of doing nothing. If the nature of the function is such that it is discretionary, you have to have the option of doing nothing or it doesn't mean anything. I mean, if you have, for example, a decision whether or not to prosecute a criminal, if you have the decision whether or not to investigate some securities fraud, the question is whether you investigate or not. And so the decision to do nothing has to be one of the options. Or you can expect agencies with sizable budget requests.
I accept that in most circumstances, but there are circumstances when that isn't an option. I don't know how to word it, but I can see what you're saying. When you're going into an investigation, there certainly is, you have no proof yet.
My point, Mr. Chair, Representative Bell, is simply that that's what the law is right now in the statute. It says that a discretionary function is defined in terms of taking action or no action at all.
I guess if that last sentence were left in, I just can't see that we would ever leave someone in a threatening situation because we couldn't afford to do something about it. I would want to get, you know, it gets the wording and headed in that direction.
We can't be litigating too much. Representative Emerson has a question, and I'd like to move on this.
On the language to change or alter the flow of traffic, would that include negligent construction design of highways, bridges, and things like that?
Way to pass that off, Mr. Landau.
I didn't draft this.
That's a major change in Oregon law if we are now absolving government of responsibility for the construction of highways.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edmondson, I'm not the one who wrote this either, and I'm not that current on what the case law is that this is intended to address. My sense is the primary thrust of this is to identify the people who have the authority to exercise discretion within the meaning of discretionary immunity generally. And the types of decisions are those that are listed there. I don't know about the change. I think the reference to change or alter the flow of traffic is not something that's intended to cover the design of the road. It seems to me it's the flow. It has to do with traffic signals and yield right-of-way signals and that sort of thing.
Well, perhaps our problem then is having this list here includes but is not limited to such decisions as. Every time we start adding lists in law, we start, you know, it sort of points out problems. Maybe it would be more simpler to just say, just let it, on line three, and put a period after action.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
Not go in the list.
Perhaps Representative Edmondson, I was looking at it too, and I thought all of line three, and I'm somewhere between doing something and getting close to doing none of this, but all of line three and then skip to line six, making that requires with an S and the rest are up to the word decision in line six. So discretionary decision, one which involves choices among alternative courses of action and requires the exercise of independent judgment by the person making the decision, period.
Oh, okay.
Get rid of that laundry list.
Yeah. Representative Johnson.
I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Any objection to that? Hearing none.
Your future as a chair, Mr. Chair.
I sit next to Mannix.
We've trained him up in civil stuff. Maybe one of these days he can become a big chair of a real committee.
It should read anywhere it says discretionary. It should be discretionary function or duty.
Staff, why don't you explain to us what we're doing?
The proper language to bring it into line with the language that exists in the statute should refer to a discretionary function or duty rather than discretionary decision. I've discussed this with Mr. Landau, and we're both, I think, in agreement as to that change.
So
minor.
On line three?
Yeah, it should be a discretionary function or duty is one which involves.
Voices. Okay, any objection to that? Hearing none, that's so adopted, it's ordered. Any further amendments to the bill?
What does this amendment read now? Somebody read it for me, what's left?
A discretionary function or duty is one which involves choices among alternate courses of action and requires the exercise of independent judgment by the person making the decision.
Period.
Period. Discretionary function also includes the decision not to audit or to audit. We're going to go right along ahead. Moving right ahead. Let's go ahead. Let's pick an old wound. Any further amendments, members of the committee on this bill, which we substantially changed from where it came to us?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Clark.
Are you asking any further changes to the county's proposed amendments or any further amendments to the bill?
Anything you'd like to do, Representative Clark.
Where are we with the amendments that were marked DOJ proposed amendments?
DOJ proposed amendments haven't been moved yet. And they haven't been added to the bill.
Mr. Chair, I would move the DOJ proposed amendments with the following modifications.
Okay.
Line 3, between the word any and act, insert the word discretionary. And then on line 4, after the word decisions, place a period and delete the rest of the sentence.
Representative Clark, to your amendment. Motion.
Well, I want to make sure that the phrase any act is modified to at least be any discretionary. Perhaps it should be any discretionary function or duty to be consistent. But I want to make sure that the phrase that we just so carefully defined is used here. And then, as far as the second part of that, deleting the everything after work release decisions, it seems to me that the decision relating to probation, parole, et cetera, is one thing, but the actual supervision is another. It perhaps ought not get protection.
We already have some existing language. Is it Section 4 of the bill the existing language, Mr. Landau? No, it is not. Okay, made part of this chapter. All right, any objection to that amendment?
Amendment Bean.
Representative Johnson?
The amendment
Bean. We're going to amend the, actually, we amended the DOJ proposed amendments to read as follows. No public body and no officer, employee, or agent of a public body shall be liable for any discretionary function or duty relating to probation, parole, post-prison supervision, leave, or work release decisions. Period.
Period. So I took off the rest of it?
Right.
Okay.
Representative Clark, so moves that amendment to the bill, right, Representative Clark?
Correct.
Any objection? Representative Bell?
Mr. Chairman, I have a question. If this section is not added to the bill, does that change the way...
They can argue
the tort liability thing.
They can argue written. Under the general definition of discretionary function that those things can probably be covered. This makes it just a little clearer.
I never thought I'd see this bill.
So, okay, take a victim. They could, the way the law currently reads, they could go to court and argue their case, but with this provision, they would have less opportunity to go to court and argue.
Well, there's been some case law on this, I assume, in the areas particularly of the parole board conduct and releasing people and things like that, which is clearly said that that's discretionary function. There's no liability attached. What this probably does is simply codifies what the courts have already interpreted the discretionary function to be in the area of probation, parole, post-prison supervision, leave, or work release decisions. So
then we're not making a change,
yeah.
Basically.
Well, you have 140 parolees, and you got two people to watch them. Something's going to happen, you know. It's life in the government service. And we just can't, if they haven't got enough bodies out there to track these people down appropriately, someone can't allege, well, if you had chosen to go after C and D instead of X and Y that day, you may have been able to stop this, wouldn't you, Mr. Jones? Well, I had to see these other people. You know, you get into that kind of thing. So that's why it's in there. Any further discussion? Any objection to that amendment? So adopted, so ordered. Representative Miller?
Move House Bill 3520 to the full.
Representative Clark moves House Bill 3520 as amended to the full committee with due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Representative Bryan?
No.
The clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Bryan?
Aye.
Representative Clark?
Aye.
Representative Edmondson?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Mannix?
Yes.
Representative Miller?
Aye.
Representative Bell?
Aye.
Chair Baum?
Votes yes. House Bill 3520 is forwarded to the full committee with as amended with due pass recommendation. Thank you. We're going to close the work session, House Bill 3520. Who wants to carry this bill? Volunteers? Representative Edmondson. Close the work session. We're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2732, limiting tort liability of charitable organizations and its employees and agents. We'd like to ask William Buck, Dennis Mills, Mark Siegel. Excuse me if I didn't get that right. We'll try to do this in groups of three. Oh, Representative, we want to come up.
Well,
you bet, Representative Van Leeuwen. We'd be glad to have you. I wasn't sure if you would. Sorry, come on up here, Liz, and sit down. And why don't you gentlemen
thank
just hold
you.
Back for a minute.
Okay.
Representative Lubin, you can come up. Whoever wants to come up with her is welcome to. We'll let you come forth then.
Okay. Thank you for this opportunity. For the record, I'm State Representative Liz Van Leeuwen from House District 37. And several of the people are here who are interested in the bill. I am going to depend on Dan McCulloch to carry part of what I might be doing, because I need to go back to another committee. And Tom Barrows is here, and Jack Kane is running around someplace in the building but has an interest in the bill. I think you heard the bill once before. Before, you have the Dash 1 amendments before you, the volunteer amendments.
Right.
Okay, and I hope you will go with those amendments. I think as we get into the nonprofits, many of the people involved in doing the work of the organization are nonprofits. And as the bill is written, and in the amendments, we put in the figures that you were concerned about last time, the limits there that we hope you will go with. And remember, this affects churches, fraternals, things like the youth organizations, private schools. And there are some people here to testify as far as they are concerned. And with that, and with you hopefully taking a good look at the amendment, I hope you will give this bill a favorable hearing. And with that, I don't know which one next.
Okay. I'm Dan McCulloch, represent the Seventh-day Adventist Church and also the Oregon Federation of Independent Schools. As you have the bill before you, to ease some of the concern that maybe was raised at the last hearing on the original bill, on page 2, line 5, under section 2 and subsection 5, this bill in no way exempts for gross neglect. It simply says, this section shall not affect the liability of any charitable organization or its employees or agents for gross neglect or intentional torts. I think that was raised last time, that, you know, what are we doing around here in terms of carrying the torch one day and having something go wrong the next. And this bill is a visionary bill. This bill is good preventative maintenance that, as our previous governor and as the president of the United States look for volunteer service, and we all realize that most, if not all, charitables are 90% plus driven by volunteers. That's why the amendment is before you that includes volunteers as part of the definition. And then the limitations are set in conjunction with the state limitations, so that these things are laid out to give the kinds of protection and also to be able to give the charitable organizations, those that fall under that very, very narrow category of 501c3, the opportunity to carry on their work without having to face horrendous tort suits. Now, you may ask what kinds of conditions are presently taking place. In the Seventh-day Adventist organization, we're a large organization, and our ability, I suppose, because of our size, to withstand a very large sum of money in a tort liability might be feasible. But the fact is, there are many charitables and churches that are independent agencies that are 95 or greater percentage of their activities are carried on by the volunteers, that a single injury occurrence could easily close the doors, and to have to sell all of the assets in order to care for that under the present conditions of the statute. So I am here to urge a favorable consideration of this bill and a favorable consideration of the amendments that includes the volunteers and also sets the liability limits consistent with that of the state. So that's my sharing with you. Do you have any questions for me?
Yeah, Mr. McCulloch. We need to, I'm sure other witnesses will be aware of this, but we need to have specific instances, if you could, of when you couldn't get insurance or when someone got hit so hard that they lost services, or we kind of need a little help in that regard. If you have some specifics or provide that, it would be appreciated. If not, we'll look to the witnesses as well.
There are some witnesses that are going to testify that are going to give some instances of the types of ranges that exist in some single institutions in terms of the liabilities in some schools, that we'll be able to share with you that information. And I realize that it's easier to come to consensus and decision when there is a tremendous abuse being taken place than it is to maybe look to a very strong visionary piece of legislation that would be preventative. And I see this legislation being that. There have been some very large cases in this state. And I spoke with Boy Scouts International and also Boy Scouts here in the state of Oregon. They faced a very difficult suit. But there was judgment there for gross neglect, and they paid for that. But they also deal with, in their institution, a great deal of smaller liability problems. And they're self-insured, and they try to deal with that. But these, you know, I want to be here and hold the torch up for those smaller institutions that simply would lose all that they had if these kinds of claims were maintained.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. Identify yourself, please, for the record.
Yes, my name is Mark Siegel, and I'm the president of the Oregon Federation of Independent Schools. I have